Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Daily Podcast is proud to be in partnership with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Whether your business needs cars, vans, or larger commercial vehicles, you can rent from the best lineup in the UK with Enterprise. And with flexible long-term rental, you can get vehicles for as long as you need them, from minutes to months. Whatever the mission, Enterprise's mobility experts can build a bespoke solution to suit your business needs. Visit enterprise.co.uk/business to find out more.
This is TalkSport Daily.
Hello, happy Christmas Eve, everyone, and welcome to a special Christmas Eve Best of the Interviews podcast. That's what it's called. There was about nine people locked in a room for about 4 hours, all getting paid stupid amounts of money to come up with this podcast title, Best of Interviews. Oh, sorry, I apologise. Best of the Interviews. That took another 3 hours before they managed. It could have been Best of Interviews. We don't need the word "the," but someone said probably in another meeting after the first one, I think we should put the word "the" in there. Gone back to the desk. Emails have gone back and forwards. Yep, okay, we all agree. The. So this is the Best of the Interviews. Well, I think Best of Interviews. Just interviews. Anyway, have a listen to this. Happy Christmas Eve. It's a collection, would you believe, of the best interviews from 2019. I don't know who picked these. There were no judges involved. There's a brief synopsis of what's actually in this podcast. I'll read it to you. So let me remind you, it's called Christmas Eve, Best of the Interviews. And the synopsis is a collection of the best interviews from 2019. Yeah, there was probably another meeting as well for that one. Anyway, sit back. Happy Christmas Eve. I've had to come in on Christmas Eve to record this. Why I couldn't do this last week, I do not know. But anyway, sit back, enjoy, and happy Christmas, everyone, for tomorrow.
Delighted to say that England's World Cup winning hero Ben Stokes joins us now live in the studio at TalkSport, and his new book is out. It's called On Fire. Ben, good morning.
Morning,
how
Ben.
Are you, Ben?
Good morning. I'm very good, thanks.
Nice to be home.
Yes, but it's a bit too cold. So
too cold, of course. Now, On Fire, Ben. There had to be a book in this. It's just been an unbelievable year, eh?
Yeah, it's been. Been fantastic. 2019 will always be that year for English cricket to be able to look back on with some pretty amazing memories, not just as a player, but I think as a fan of cricket as well.
Yeah.
Ali? I've got to say, mate, and I hope you don't, I don't think you'll ever get sick of going back to that World Cup final, right? I watched that in Portugal, right? And still to this day, I can't believe it. Somebody had written a film and written a script about the whole thing. They ripped it up and thrown it away. They said, that's not believable. What was it like to play in?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. If you were to write that down before it happened, you'd be like, no, there's no chance that's ever going to happen. But to be a part of something like that was honestly incredible. And it is still quite hard to put into words that. But it's amazing what finals do in sport. They always seem to bring out, great sporting moments. Yeah. And certainly in the world of cricket and probably in the world of sport, that World Cup final will be.
What was the pressure like, Ben? Because there was an expectancy. And then you lost a couple of games. Was it Australia and was it India? I can't remember. Lost a couple of games going up. And then all of a sudden, I think you had to win the final three to become world champions. So there was an expectancy, but there must have been an incredible pressure.
Yeah, I think, we obviously were world number one going into that tournament. We were favourites, but, that doesn't mean anything once the tournament starts. Anybody can beat anybody. Just depends who turns up best on the day. And it got to that point where, we knew that we had to win, these group games to get ourselves through. And rather than hide away from, the reality of that situation we were faced with, we sat down as a team and basically just opened up about how we were all feeling and put everything out on the table and made everyone aware of this is the situation we find ourselves in, but we need to embrace it and understand it, I guess. And I think that got the weight of you know, that expectation off everybody's shoulders.
It's amazing it had to be New Zealand as well, Ben. Look, I spoke to mum and dad and they were ecstatic, they were, but I don't think the neighbours were talked on for a few weeks over there. Was that awkward? You've been home since, yeah. Haven't you?
Yeah, I've been home. I went back for a week before the test guys came out to New Zealand to spend some time with mum and dad. You know, New Zealand's, for me, it's not just a cricket tour. It's a bit more than that. It's a chance to see family and stuff like that. And, you know, there was a few, you know, jokes flying around with a bit of tongue-in-cheek and stuff like that about
but
the
overall, it was good.
Overall, it's fantastic. It's a brilliant place, yeah.
Did you feel, Ben, that particular tournament? Because I remember there was an incident. I think Johnny Bairstow had come out and got one or two ex-players. I think they got Michael Vaughan and maybe one or two of the press boys. See, at that particular time and after that, did you kind of form a, I don't want to say siege mentality, but did that bring you together even more?
Oh, I think we've always had that. We've always, because we've been a 4 year, obviously this was a 4 year, you know, journey for us getting to this World Cup. And we were a very stable team before that. You know, there wasn't too many changes leading up into the World Cup. So we were, you know, a unit for quite a long time. And what you have to do in, you know, as in a team sport is stick together through thick and thin, whether that is on-field stuff or off-field stuff. And that's sort of the mentality that would be expected of you to come into the team. Mm-hmm. And it's something that Owen Morgan has really drilled into us as, you know, we're a unit, we stick together, we play together, and we're the ones that count. We don't focus on anybody else.
It was nice as well, because it being pressure of an England captain, you know, I speak to Harmy, and so many people were saying it's too much for Joe, like it has been for great players, give it to Ben. But Harmy was, no, you don't give it to Ben. No, just leave him be. But it was nice to see Joe get a few runs.
Yeah, I mean, being test captain is, you know, one of the toughest jobs in sport, and one of the most criticised. And, you know, that depending on how people speak about you is how well the performance is on the pitch from you individually and as a team. And it's unfair most of the time that when things don't go too well, the captain gets it all.
Sir.
You know, there's other people out there trying to perform as well who, you know, add to winning or, you know, don't necessarily perform well enough to win. Yeah. So it's been tough, but I actually called Joe to get a double 100 on day one of our first warm-up game to Rory Burns. I think I stood at slip and I went, Joe's going to get a double 100 this tour.
Yeah.
Didn't look like it after the first game. but then he managed to go out there and do it. And honestly, you know, that was saying... you know, form's temporary, class is permanent.
Oh, no doubt about that. What about when you hear those commentary clips? Do you still get a little tingle, think, oh yeah, what a few days that was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had James Vince got married at the back end of the summer, and Owen Morgan was there, and he must have showed everybody this England World Cup montage 15 times to every single person who was invited to the wedding, but it still doesn't get boring watching it.
Do you watch it back a lot, or
watched it back? Because you don't get the when you're in it, you don't get to see, you know, like, because obviously cameras and stuff like that nowadays at sport is just fantastic. You know, all the different angles, the commentary that goes along with it, the crowd reaction. You don't really see that until you see it on TV. So to be able to watch it back and see everyone's reaction to what was going on was awesome.
You mentioned in the book there was a lot of insults traded between England and Australian players during the Ashes. Who was the worst offender? But that's normal, isn't it, when the Aussies take on England or vice versa? Was there one in particular who was a right pain?
No, I think, you know, that in sport, you know, you're out there trying to win a game for your country. Tensions get high at certain periods in the game. Adrenaline, key moments don't come around that often, and that's generally where things start to pick up a bit. And it just happens, and you know, at the end of the day, we're men trying to perform out on the pitch, both trying to do the same job. So you know,
Smith was incredible, wasn't he?
I mean, you know, as hard as it is to say, as you know, he's Australian, and he was a massive reason as to why we couldn't get the Ashes back. Yeah. You've just got to hold your hands up
incredible.
For greatness.
There's also a feature you may have heard us ask guests who joined the show, Ben. It's called First and Last, where we simply ask first and last questions. It's quick fire, so it's easy peasy. So I'm going to ask for your first and last. First ever gig you went to, Ben?
First gig. think it was Hugh Jackman, actually. That's the first time I've ever been to.
Yeah?
The greatest show, yeah.
All right. Okay, yeah. Ali?
Okay, the last time you were starstruck?
Hugh Jackman.
There you are.
Yeah.
It can't be him, no. It can't be him for the third time. First sporting hero? That's not you.
Just proper sporting hero, yeah. Jordan Spieth.
Ah.
Wow, interesting. The first time you used your fame to get something for free? We did it all the time with no fame.
Was that Rolex?
The first time. Oh, I was probably to get into a bar when I was 18.
Love it. That'll do for us.
First, you won't get in trouble because it's a bit of fun. First celebrity crush.
Jennifer Aniston. I'm probably not the only one.
There's a queue.
Yeah. Have you got any friends?
A queue up to Fleet Street with that one, to be honest with you. First outlandish big money purchase.
My first watch. Yeah.
Okay.
First watch. Yeah. Can you tell us what that is?
No, that's a nice. It just tells the time.
Is the one you're wearing?
No, tells the time.
Oh, so you've got several watches.
A man of many watches.
Last meal you cooked?
Fajitas for Joe Root and Rory Burns.
Ah. No way.
Yeah.
Chicken, beef,
prawn.
Did they know how to open them?
The last TV series that you binged on? You're Peaky Blinders, man?
Yeah, but that
was just
going to
say that. I forgot.
Oh, well, you need to get in quicker then.
Yeah.
Drugs,
no,
gangs.
No, it's about crime, about the murder profiling thing. It's on Netflix at the moment.
Netflix is just fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's heaven sent for boys like yourself.
Mindhunter.
Yeah. Mindhunter, that's it. Mindhunter, yeah. That's the last one.
Wait a minute. Who told you that? You never guessed that.
It just came to me.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of the TalkSport Daily is brought to you by Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Planning to hire or share a car or van? Enterprise is there every step of the way. Whenever and wherever you need a vehicle and whatever it's for, Enterprise can help. With over 450 locations across the UK, they're just around the corner. Whether you need a weekend rental, a holiday hire, a replacement car, or you're planning a business trip, home or away, Enterprise are there to help. To find out more and book, visit enterprise.co.uk.
Bomb Squad!
You know, when a lion is hungry, they say it feel like it's been starving for a year. So when it sees its prey, it's ready to eat everything. And that's how I feel like when I'm in the ring, like a lion, like a king that I am.
We have the one and only Deontay Wilder here in studio. Good morning to you, Deontay. It is so good to have you in here. I believe that you were somewhat mobbed when you came in the news building a short time ago. So many people wanted to meet you.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, it's always a great time when I'm over here. You know, I come over here so much. You know, sometimes, you know, we try to sneak in. You know, I'm always like, I got family down in Sheffield. So, you know what I mean? I'm always down there at times or whatever, and just enjoying ourselves. Sometimes we'll come to London and sometimes we'll go to the other different spots. They like to show me new locations, but it's always a great time when I'm here.
Fantastic. Tell me this, what does a man from Tuscaloosa, Alabama think of London?
I like London. You know, the only thing I don't like is the weather. You know, it's very unpredictable. And when my assistant told me it was going to be 100 degrees, I didn't believe him. I said, you're lying. You know, and, you know, and he showed me the forecast of it, and it said 100. And when we got here, it was definitely sunshine. You know, it's, I was like, wow, I could not believe it, you know. And because I'd never been over here where it was, like, real warm, nice weather. It was always, like, raining, you know, or cold, you know. And it was real nice. And today, it's nice, but it's raining, you know, and...
Brilliant. You never know the moment. Yeah, I'm from Scotland. It could snow later in the day in Glasgow. I don't know. Bob, what do you make of this? You ever seen this studio like this? Look at it.
No, it is, but it's quite rightly, because the high, I believe it's still to be the highest accolade in sport, to be the heavyweight champion of the world. This man's treading in the steps of Marciano and Johnson and Ali. Of course he deserves this respect. Sometimes sports people get fawned upon, but if you're the heavyweight champion of the world...
Do you think he beat Tyson Fury, Bob?
Let me ask you one question. Okay, he brought it up. Let me ask you this one question. There must have been a point. I don't know. You're in the ring. No one can talk about that. But there must have been a point where someone in the corner says, listen, champ, this is close. Don't let it be close. Give this guy his ticket. Send him home. Okay? And you then had the most magnificent two-punch combination and thought, there you go. Job done. What did you... What, was there a second when he got up when you thought, okay, well done.
You must have thought he was gone. When you thing, you looked over and you must have thought, that's it.
Slow motion of your face when you turned and go,
man,
oh,
yo,
no.
I was kissing my wife and everything. Yeah, baby, we did, you know what I'm saying? And when to see him rise up and stuff like that, you know, it was one of those moments like, what in the hell? You know, but, you know, it's exciting. It's interesting for the sport, you know, it brings that. That drama to the sport, man, and I'm just so happy to be a part of this division in these times right here, because we was once in a dark place and now we got a huge light right now, and it's exciting. And you know, the fight was amazing. It was controversial, which, you know, I'll forever say I knocked him out, which I did. The referee, you know, it wasn't the judges. I think the judges had it right. It was definitely a very close fight. I don't think it was far apart like people put it, the 10-2. I think people got that perspective because of Steve Fairhood card. You know, everybody, you know, went away with that a little bit. Ain't no way impossible that was. You know.
Did you like Fury?
Yeah, Fury, he's an all right guy. You know what I mean? He brings a certain type of personality to the division, and we need different personalities here. You know, this is what makes it so exciting, you know. And you know, I know we say things, we do things, but it's a part of the sport. And I can always deal with somebody that's gonna bring a great show and gonna put on a great performance for the fans, because that's my goal. I know that the belts are switching up to different, you know, faces and different hands and stuff like that. And people always ask, you still gonna fight AJ? I'm like, you know, just because someone loses doesn't mean it's the end of the road. You know, I always say that's how you become a 2-time, 3-time, 4-time champion. You know, and the heavyweight division is so small. So, you know, it's enough spaces and there's enough room for everybody to get in with everybody. And, you know, before I retire, I want to be able to say I fought the best, all of the best, you know, no matter who they were. You know, if you had a buzz and people wanted to see that fight before I end my career, before I leave, because I'm not going to be here long. You know, I got a lot of, you know, we setting everything up. You know, I got a great financial team, and we're going to get to the point where I'm not even spending my money off of my fight money. I'm living off the interest and allow everything to build up, because I talk about generation wealth. You know, when I look at all my children and I sit them and be able to interact with each other, love each other, and build that intellect of them with their mindset of learning and want to do more, you know, even learning different languages. I sit back sometimes and share a tear because I never had the opportunity that they had.
We've got the Netball World Cup just around the corner as well, taking place over here up in Liverpool, and which means we have the world's best player in our midst, and thankfully she's English. She's Jeeva Mentor. Good to see you, Jeeva. Thanks for coming
in. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me, boys.
I think that is that official now? You were voted the number one player in the world, weren't you? No pressure.
It's quite an honour, really. Yeah, I got voted in 2014 and then 2017 as well. And to think that I play a team sport, to be given a nod like that is a pretty cool acknowledgement. But at the end of the day, I can't do it by myself out there. So it's a hard one to swallow.
Yeah. Your route into the sport was an interesting one, because you were doing other sports as well. You were doing kind of trampolining and different things like that. And I heard a little story of you going off with your mum to try it, because you're very tall, about sort of 11 years old, to try out for basketball. And not getting a great deal of encouragement. And that was a bit of a weird story. It was odd, wasn't it? You'd think they'd be kind of, they'd see how tall you were at a young age and be kind of very keen for you to get involved.
Yeah, and I think as getting into a bit of coaching nowadays, I see if someone looks tall and athletic, I'm like, come on, let's see what you can do. And yeah, it was actually Mum and I, we walked into a sports hall and they had a basketball session going on at the time, and we sort of waited to the side because we didn't want to interrupt and waited for our time to go up and speak and showed interest about getting into the sport because I played for the local boys team, but I didn't have a team outside of school, and they really showed no interest, and we ended up turning around and walking back out, and that was the end of my basketball days.
You could have been in the WNBA.
Oh my gosh, been over in the States. I know. Yeah.
But it's worked out pretty well.
It's not done too badly.
I mean, you must be delighted about the rise of netball. I mean, it was always a sport that was played by a lot of girls, but it was a sport considered a school sort of sport. Mm. But I think with the rise of Sky, the success of the England team, it really has become quite a special sport now.
To see it evolve as well is brilliant, from sort of school netball to now the tenacious athletes that we have out there, the physicality of it all. They say it's a non-contact sport, but when you've got two strong female athletes running for the same ball, there's going to be collisions all over the place. And netball's in a really good place at the moment. What we managed to do last year with our history-breaking moment and winning gold medal on the Commonwealth Games on Australian soil has kind of set it up for this perfect World Cup on our home soil. The Aussies obviously coming over here for a bit of redemption, but we've got the Kiwis to watch out for, the Jamaicans, South Africans are hot on our heels, so it just makes for a really exciting World Cup campaign.
Now, we, as Andy pointed out, there is a slight Australian twang in the voice, even though you're born in Bournemouth, because you've been playing out there for 11 years now, yeah?
Yes, out there? So netball turned sort of professional out in Australia, and the league that I play in out is pretty much like what the NBA is to basketball in the States. It's the Premier League, the best league in the world with all the best players playing. And I've been out in Australia for 10 years now and sort of doing my craft, and a new skill to my bow, I guess, now is this book that I've managed to write called Leap. And it all started from pretty much taking that leap of faith in terms of leaping to another country, the other side of the world.
Yeah, was that, you sound very, reading the book, you seem obviously very close to your family. And so that was quite a bold thing to do at quite a young age, because, it's not something you can just hop back from a whim, is it? You're heading literally the other side of the world.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'm always a firm believer, you've got to put yourself outside of your comfort zone, and that's how you really test yourself. Sometimes decisions you make are great, sometimes they don't work out, and I think that's kind of what I talk about in the book, that you have highs, lows, challenges. It's all about trying to find the better version of yourself, trying to improve, and just trying to find that support around you. And that's what I hope the book isn't just for sort of netballers, it's for everybody from all walks of life, and that hopefully there's a little bit of advice that they can take from that throughout.
There was a period, wasn't there, when the kind of rules were changed around the ability to play for the England team. A bit like in rugby, they decided if you played overseas, you couldn't play for the national side, and so you're out of the picture for a while.
Yeah, and that's probably one of the low points that I talk about in the book. I mean, netball is all I'd known for almost sort of two decades. I got into the sport at a young age of sort of 14, and then 16 when I was in the senior squad. And yeah, there became a moment in time where they changed the rules where we weren't actually allowed to play out in Australia, and I was like, well, hang on a minute, this is sort of where I'm basing myself. And from that, the rules were that I wasn't allowed to play for England, and I ended up sitting on sidelines for 18 months, and common sense managed to prevail, and look where we are now. We've got sort of six of the England girls are actually based out in Australia, improving their craft, and it's taken netball to the next level, and we're now competing with the top nations.
So you were saying winning gold in the Commonwealth Games was fantastic and dramatic, the way you did it. So against the Aussies in Australia. So
you say you'll never forget those moments, which is a wonderful thing to have within you, even not while you're playing, but once you've finished.
Yeah, and I still listen back to the commentary of those last sort of dying seconds, and it gives me tingles. And it's something that you couldn't quite believe at the time, but now looking back, it was a massive moment, and definitely probably one of the highs of my career. And I'd love to be able to replicate that over and over again. I've been playing this sport for almost two decades now, and we keep coming away with a third, or probably the worst place, which is a fourth, where you just miss out on the podium. Mm. So, to be able to back it up, I think, is so important for us.
Have you ever listened back to the Aussie commentary of that moment?
I haven't, and I did look around when I was in the stadium. A lot of the Aussies walked out pretty quickly after that game. They didn't stick around for the medal ceremony, that's for sure.
But it obviously has made them incredibly hungry at doing our backyard now, which they've been telling you at club level, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I went straight back into the club setup after Com Games, and I kind of walked in sheepishly because I had two of the Diamond girls actually in the team that I was captaining. So it'll be very interesting this time round. We definitely got a target on our back, but this is my fifth World World Cup, and this is probably going to be one of the toughest ones I've been involved in because the standard of netball around the world has increased and improved so much. We've got the Jamaicans and we've got the South Africans hot on our heels as well. So it's going to be a fantastic tournament, one I'm looking forward to taking part in.
You also wrote in the book about your personal life, and you said it kind of around the time of the Commonwealth Games, your marriage was breaking down and you were trying to kind of compartmentalise, the way people always do in any walk of life, what was going on with you personally and what was happening professionally, because they were obviously completely different.
It's amazing how you can be on such a high but also have such lows at the same time, and I think that's what made winning and being in that environment so special, but also made me focus in what I need to do because I knew things were breaking down around me. And I definitely talk about it in the book, and that's definitely one of the challenges. And still today, some of the things you go through, people see you as this strong, confident character, but inside you could be breaking and upset and just trying to find those ways out and knowing that it's okay. We don't go through life with everything being tickety-boo, that there are those struggles out there, and to accept it, to talk about it, and know that it makes you a stronger person at the end of the day.
Tickety Boo was very Australian.
Was it? Damn it.
That's it. Many more years and we won't recognise you. There'd be no Bournemouth left in you. Yeah.
I'm done to ask you back.
Brilliant. His record stands at 29 wins, 20 by knockout. One contentious draw. You won that one as well. He went to Germany, took Klitschko's belts. He went to America, was robbed of the WBC heavyweight title. John Allen, Brazil Sports Breakfast, the People's Champion. The Gypsy King, good morning. Unbeaten heavyweight champion, Tyson Fury. Tyson, good morning.
Good morning, mate.
Good morning, and after an intro like that,
you
missed one thing. I went to Saudi Arabia and beat Braun Strowman in the WWE as well.
That doesn't count.
Of course it does.
Why are you not giving him it?
Oh, come on. Nobody hits anyone in that.
They don't. I'd like him to go and have a little tryout.
I'll take him on.
And feel how painful it is to get slammed above someone nearly 7 foot head onto a hard canvas.
Tyson, if you can arrange that, that would be perfect.
I'll get him down to the training centre in Orlando and we'll see how uncontacted it is.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but what made you do that? Listen, it was fantastic entertainment, but what made you do it?
Well, I've been a lifelong WWE fan all my life.
Really?
Watched it all the time. Been a big fan of all the big wrestlers, and now my son is, my oldest daughter is. They love it. They play the PlayStation game every single day. They wrestle up and down in school and wherever else. What child doesn't like wrestling?
But I'm guessing, to get into that arena, that stage, it's something you must have done. You can't just go like click your fingers saying, right, I'm going to take on a top wrestler.
Yeah, I did. I'm athletic enough to be able to learn quickly. Vince McMahon said he's recruited all sports stars from all different sports and he's never seen someone come into their game, have a couple of training sessions and pick it up like that. Yeah. I look like a natural in there.
Right, I've got to ask you, moving swiftly on, right? There's so much going on, there's so much happened, there's so much to happen, I would suggest. Why the book right now?
I think it's the right time for the book right now because there's a lot of people out there suffering with mental health. It's a big epidemic at the moment. You know, the government's going to spend 800 odd million quid on mental health. And I think there's a lot of people that need hope, help, and the will to just go forward and open up to people. And this book gives a real insight in what it's like to bottle it all up and not tell anyone and hide it and be ashamed of it. And it gives you an insight on what it's like to come out.
Did that come to you early when you were at school? Or?
Yeah, I've always suffered with anxiety and depression, but I never knew what it was up until I got educated on it in 2016. So I used to suffer and think, oh, this is just the way that life is. I thought it was like a mood swing to begin with. I didn't know, I didn't understand it. Always happy, unhappy, up and downs, highs and lows. And it wasn't until I had a mental breakdown in 2017 that I really got to grips and started getting educated on the matter and learning all about it.
When you say a mental breakdown, you were just confused. You think, what's wrong with me? Why am I like this? Or when did you realise I'm having a breakdown?
I've had a couple of breakdowns in my life.
Yeah.
The biggest ones that stand out, one was in 2012. That was the first time out of all the depression I've had in my life where I start thinking about suicide. And start thinking about smashing cars into trees and jumping in front of trains and off bridges and stuff. And I didn't know why I was feeling like this because I was undefeated. I was British and Commonwealth champion at that time. I had a good career going and I just felt most of the time like I didn't want to live anymore and I didn't want to be on this planet.
Were you scared to tell someone, talk about it, or...?
I was afraid to come out with it because, you know, I come from a long line of fighting men and I'm supposed to be a big, tough boxer, yeah. Nothing can faze me. Yeah. And all of a sudden I've got all these problems and I feel as vulnerable as a child.
Do you know who suffers big, Tyson? I didn't realise. The cricketers, they have big problems with this. And if you look at sports, suicide yeah. rates, cricket is terrible because they're away from home for so long, they're under pressure, you know, it's you against the bowler, stuff like that. A few of the cricketers have told me it's horrendous. Horrendous.
I was going to say to you, could I suggest, could this actually be your greatest achievement? Could this be greater than boxing, what you're doing here, making awareness of this? Because make no mistake about it, you're no better than me. 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, nobody spoke about it.
Exactly. You know, I think one of the first high-profile sportsmen was Frank Bruno.
Yeah.
And he was the first one who started coming out of it, and his problems were publicly documented. And that's why I became an ambassador for the Frank Bruno Foundation, because Frank was one of the first big stars in this country to open up about it. So I'm just following on from that, really. And I think this is bigger than boxing, much bigger yeah. than boxing. And this is the reason I came back and made the second career, second journey. Not for any other reason other than to document and to let people know how you can come back from suicide to back to the top.
And this is chapter 8 in the book, isn't it? Chapter 8, I believe. The dark sees you discuss your mental health.
Yeah.
So even just for that, it's worth getting a hold Absolutely. Of the book.
You know, I don't hold back any punches in this book. And when I started writing this book 3 years ago, I was very mentally unwell. I was drinking heavily. I didn't want to live on a daily basis. And I was 28 stone in weight. And that's from the beginning of the book to the end of the book. All the stuff's going on. I've headlined twice in Las Vegas. I've been headlined in Saudi Arabia. I've got a single coming out with Robbie Williams, an ITV documentary, an autobiography.
Yeah.
So it's all gone from absolutely terrible, disastrous moments in my life
yeah.
to as best as it could ever be.
So someone listening this morning, who do they go and see? Is it's not a doctor. Who do they have to see if they're feeling some of the symptoms you're telling us about, which is in the book?
Suffering with mental health problems, they need to seek medical advice immediately, whether it's a psychiatrist, whether it's confiding friends.
And don't be scared to do that.
Definitely not. The sooner you get to grips with you need help, the sooner you can get into the recovery. If I would have went 10 years ago, I may not have had the breakdown, I may not have been through all this trauma, I may not have almost killed myself. So as soon as you go to see the doctors and get well again, seek medical yeah. advice, the sooner you can get back to being normal.
But this is incredible, because you were talking earlier about jumping in front of a truck. For me, that walk, when the noise comes out, the music comes out, and you walk to that ring, that must be, for me, that's terrifying. But you revel in it now.
Is that where you feel at home?
Well, there's two characters to Tyson Fury. There's Tyson Fury, the man, and then there's the Gypsy King, the entertainer. And it's totally two different people. You won't believe how different them two people are. It's like another person sat there. It's not me today. Mm. It's an entertainer. It's somebody who's never been. Because the man has been affected by stuff that can bring everyone down. But Gypsy King has never, ever had any defaults.
Yeah.
He's done everything asked of him. He's been all around the world and boxed all the best champions has been. And he's never, ever defaulted.
Which character do you prefer?
Well, do you know, when I'm in the boxing ring and when I'm doing my stuff and entertaining, then the Gypsy King comes out and he thrives. But while I'm at home and while I'm doing day-to-day stuff and while I'm just a normal person, a husband, a father, a son, then Tyson Fury, the man, is where I want to be.
Fabulous.
And before, I always used to wear a mask. Always. That's why the book's called Behind the Mask. I used to put on an act. I was a performing monkey. Wire me up, watch me go. And that's how it was for years.
Yeah.
Because being a good boxer wasn't enough. Never. It's never enough. Because even if you're a top boxer, but nobody's interested in what you do, then it's pointless.
Mm.
To be a big pay-per-view star, to be a crossover star, to make people want to watch you and get big viewing figures, you have to do something. You have to act like a crazy man. Mm. And if you look at all the great champions from the past, the ones we can remember,
Muhammad Ali,
they were all outgoing, controversial. Yep. They were all showmen, every one of them.
Mm.
And that's what I had to portray. But now, it's like now I've got to that level, I just be me now. There's no mask anymore, there's no performances, nothing. All me.
Here's my next question for you. Emmanuel Stewart, a big name, massive, massive name in boxing, obviously, Hearns, De La Hoya, Holyfield. How important was he initially in your career?
very important. And I had the opportunity to go there. And I wasn't ready at the beginning to go. I had a lot of stuff on with me.
Was that the Bronx gym?
Yes. In the Kronk gym, yeah.
Kronk, I beg your pardon.
And then I ended up going. I thought, if I don't go over to America, I'm going to regret it forever. Yeah. Maybe this opportunity will never come again. And I won't get to train with the world's best trainer. So I just landed over there. Didn't even know I was coming.
Intimidated or not?
No, not at all. Walked in the gym. Belief. I was like, is Emmanuel Stewart here? There's like, who are you? I was like, I'm the next heavyweight champion of the world, Tyson Fury.
What did he say?
They took me down to see him, and that was it. I moved in his house. We moved in. I was there for 3 weeks in Detroit with him. We trained every day. We talked about a lot of stuff. He had a lot of knowledge on boxing. It wasn't just physical where he was great. He was great at communicating with the fighter and talking over fights and stuff.
Did you talk about demons you've had in the past? And
no, we just kept it to boxing, right, and that sort of stuff.
But you must have had an unbelievable belief and confidence. I mean, the Kronk gym in Detroit is the gym in the world, the boxing gym in the world, and you felt confident enough to walk in and say, I'm the man.
100%. Brilliant. Because I've never ever doubted my own belief, and I went there and everybody above cruiserweight, light heavyweight, got in the ring with me and I smashed them, even though I was only 21 years old. Anyone they brung, I was even sparring 2 and 3 fighters at a time, the light ones, they couldn't believe it.
Really? Ali, have you had that? I know you have, haven't you? I was going to say, have you had that confidence? I've never had confidence like that, never.
I have to be quite honest, I don't think I've ever had confidence like that. I've never been, I don't think I've been short of confidence, but I've never had confidence like that. That
no, must I didn't
be
say confidence, I didn't say words, I meant confidence.
It must be.
You've never been short of words.
No, or slight confidence, but that must be a fantastic place to be where you just, you don't actually believe, you just feel it.
In boxing, yeah, it's a fantastic place, and there's a song and it goes like this. I talk like this because I can back it up. Yeah. That's what I've done but 30 times in a row, baby.
But the Yanks seeing you coming in the ring, they're like, oh, let me have a go at him, and you just smashed them.
Do you know what it is? I've never been shy in the boxing ring. I never ever doubted my own ability. And you know what the thing is about it is? It's just a fight. Yeah. And if they're going to beat me up, crack on with it. And if they can't, then I move on to the next one.
Tyson, tell me when you're on the deck and everyone's thinking, can he get up, can he get up? Were you just composing yourself saying, I'm okay, I'll just bide my time, another couple of seconds I'll get up? Because people thought, I can't believe it, no, he can't get up. What were you thinking?
Dare I say, I think the vast majority of people watching that, I mean, somebody likened it to Schwarzenegger in the Terminator movie. He's finished, the light's just about out, and all of a sudden, what happened? How did you get up?
Well, I rose like a phoenix from the ashes. No, it's an instinct thing. It's a natural ability to recover fast. And, you know, if there's any breath left in the body, I will continue to fight back. But I'm very experienced in this game, and I've been around it a long time. I've studied it all my life. I was brought up in gyms. I'm a gym rat. So what I don't know about boxing ain't worth knowing.
Yeah.
And I know when you've been hit and hurt and dropped or buzzed or stung or whatever, then you take a knee and you don't get up until your mind's clear. A lot of these inexperienced fights, you see it with world champions even, they get dropped. Ego thing, they jump straight back up. Yeah. They're not ready.
Yeah.
They get
yeah.
tagged again and they go again.
That's why you've got 10.
That's why you've got 10. And you don't have to get up till 8.
Correct.
Well,
what did he say to you? What did the referee, I know he's looking at you, did he say anything to you
yes,
there?
Yes, he did. When I got up, he went, can you continue? I said, yes. He went, move to the left. Move to the left and a little jog to the left. Move to the right, jog to the right. He went, are you sure you're okay? I said, 100%, let's go. Because in the changing room, he said to me, it was on camera actually, you can view it on YouTube somewhere. He said, if one of you go down, God forbid, he said, I'll ask you to get up and move to the left, move to the right. He said, show me you're okay. I put both hands on his shoulders, looked in his eyes and said, I'm okay.
Drive with Adrian Durham and Darren Goff, live from St George's Park on TalkSport.
Yeah, back live at St George's Park with England ahead of the Nations League. We've got the games live on TalkSport. I'm Adrian Durham, he's Darren Goff, and this is Marcus Rashford. How are you doing, Marcus?
Good, thank you.
Marcus, when you come to this stage of the season, it's been a long season for you at Manchester United with all the games and everything that's gone with it. How's the fitness? Is it still at its peak level, or are you just starting to drop off now?
I don't think you lose the fitness. It's just more about getting that game sharp, game ready. And you know, this week we've been put for our paces, but it's more about short, sharp, because they're the things that seem to go. The fitness doesn't really go.
I've been told the seniors took on the under-21s. You played for the seniors, obviously. Yeah. Battered them, didn't you?
we won 5-0. But yeah, it's just trying to get as much of that match sharpness as we can, and that's been the probably the most difficult day of training, obviously match tempo. So yeah, it's about at the right time as well, leading up to the games. So yeah, it's been good.
Well, you've known most of the under-21s, weren't you?
Yeah, you know, some of them from when I was younger in the England youth setup, they're in the 21s now. So, you know, it's good because they're hungry to come up, and you know, we wanna show them what it's like to be up with the first team as well. So, you know, it's good on both parts.
So, in terms of joining up with England, I mean, there's obviously the serious job to get done at the Nations League, and you know, you were with England last summer, and how close. You know, gave us all some great moments at that World Cup. Has it still with you? Is it with you every day, just how far England got and how good it was in Russia last summer?
I think it's good to remember the good times, but in this group we remember the bad times as well. I remember 2016, what it felt to be knocked out, and that in comparison to last summer, you know, it's a huge gap, and we still have things to work forward to. You know, we want to win trophies here with the national team, and you know, these two games, it's an opportunity to do that, so we're going to give it everything that we've got.
About a year ago, wasn't it, you were banging in that worldie at Leeds against Costa Rica? Do you remember that
just
goal?
Before the World Cup, that was
an unbelievable strike. Just talk us through your mindset when you've got the ball. At what point is it just instinctive, or do you actually make a conscious decision, right, I'm going to have a go for goal here, having weighed up everything else, I'm just going to have a goal? Who do you think, yeah, let's hit it?
I think it's a mixture of both, really. I think on that goal I was waiting for, I think Trent was making a run on my right hand side, so I was sort of waiting but with the intention to play in the ball, but then I just seen the keeper at the same time, so I just thought, why not, then I had a goal.
Is that one of your favourite goals ever?
I think for me it's the importance of the goal and the timing. Them two can make up moments that people will never ever forget. So I'd even say that the goal against Australia on my debut, for me, felt, you know, it was an amazing day, and the game had literally just started, like 3 or 4 minutes into the game, and you know, we was 1-0 up, so I think that goal holds more value to me.
I want to ask you about Raheem Sterling, who you work with England, and is he somebody now, given what's happened to him on the pitch, you know, back-to-back title wins, and off the pitch, you know, the way he's been a leader, is he somebody now that you look up to?
I think I've always looked up to that type of person anyway, regardless if he won last year or this year, because when you're talking about looking up to an individual, it's about more than football. It's about how he is as a person, how he is to speak to, what type of advice he gives you. And for me, he's been brilliant. You know, when I've been coming to England, especially when I was younger, he'd always give me information, and you know, in the games, he'd always help you out. So, for me, nothing's changed. For everybody else on the outside that doesn't see that side to him, they probably like change the mindset on him. But for the people that know him, just the same guy.
And it's the team togetherness, I think, in sport in general, in this day and age, whether it be cricket, whether it be rugby and football, that I think has really moved on. And because you think back to football back in the day, 10, 12 years ago, it was about club rivalry. Yeah. But now it seems as though you all get on and you've got a good group together.
I think it's, you know, don't get me wrong, if you play against like a rival team and these are playing, it feels the exact same as it should be. You know, it's a team, it's a game full of rivalry, and that transition, you can say, from there to being in the same team in the past might have been a bit more difficult, but you know, we understand it, we understand each other and what we have to do to make this team, because this is whilst we're here, this is our priority. We want to make this team successful. And I think that's probably been one of the main things, I'd say, that's changed.
This is what happened when Mike Tindall came into the studio, don't you know?
So we've got 10 questions for you, right? Now, of course, when Pass. We knew you were coming in, we were all fascinated with, you know, the royal family, right?
Pass.
So they're connected to that. So this is the deal. If we ask you one you've never been asked, you have to answer it. No. If we ask one you've been asked, you can answer it, or you can refuse to answer it. All right? So question number one.
You've given
me a refusal.
You've got to answer one.
Yeah, but you rugby lads don't refuse. Remember that, Jay?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Da-da-da. Right. Question number one. It's about the Queen. Is she on WhatsApp?
Pass. Been asked that before.
No, you haven't.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have. Of course I have.
Who's asked you that? Okay, I've changed the rules.
Everyone has
I've changed the rules. You've got to answer everything.
No.
She's not on WhatsApp.
We can tailor the question.
All right.
Show us the last WhatsApp.
As far as I believe, she is not on WhatsApp.
Is there a group? Is there a royal family group WhatsApp?
Yes. Well, cousins.
All right. But it doesn't say like the Queen said, watch it, Tinders.
No.
Charles, LOL, it doesn't say that.
No.
There's no gifts.
Okay. Question number two.
Is this eyebrows again?
It gets better. Did you go to either Harry or Will Stagg?
No.
Why not?
NFI'd.
You weren't invited?
No, I wasn't.
All right, okay. Jay and I were. We turned it down. We had sports bar. We were working.
We did the midnight train that night.
No? No. You think you weren't invited? Okay. Does that surprise you?
No.
Were you gutted?
Yes.
Okay.
Would you have brought Brownie out?
Well, I'd look at it as... I would look at it as if you look at my past, would they have invited me? No.
Oh, that's question eight.
Okay.
Now, question number three fascinated all of us. What's Christmas Day like at Sandringham?
I can say pass to this because I've answered it before.
No, I've changed the rules. You have to.
Yeah, no.
What's it like?
Lovely.
Is it mental?
Look, Christmas Eve is their bigger day because they open all the presents on Christmas Eve and have a big dinner.
if the Queen gets out, that's the only try.
We haven't quite got out. So I'm just in, no, stop it.
But what's it? I mean, how many of you sat around the table?
26.
Right, and everyone's there. All the big hitters are there. Okay. How?
what does that even mean?
Hold on. You just called them the big hitters. The big heads.
Right. How close are you to the Queen? Are you in sort of chucking a Brussels sprout distance?
Pass.
Are you close to her?
I suppose you've got to be. How big is this room?
26 of you.
You can launch a Brussels sprout.
Well, hold on, you're not more than 12 people away, are you?
No.
Okay.
Well, if you think about it, think of a table of 26.
Yeah.
And then if you're in the middle...
You can hit everyone around that table with a Brussels sprout.
Yeah. Is she at the head of the table? Can I say what you just said?
Pass.
All right, okay.
This is really awkward.
Do you ever sit next to her? Have you ever sat next to her on Christmas?
Yes.
Oh, that must be so difficult.
No,
is it difficult?
I mean, not difficult, is it, Mike? Look how well you've handled this.
Right up to question three. Yeah. When you're sat next to her, are you sitting next to her thinking, that's the Queen next to me?
Yes.
Do you put out 50p and just have a look at the Queen?
just check. Like it's a portrait.
Can you just look that way? I don't believe it.
I don't believe it.
Do you take a tenner out and go, can have a signed photo?
You can't do that.
What do you mean?
Can she not sign it?
Can't sign a note.
Oh, no, okay. It's against the law here. Yeah, he's against the law. You can't do that, can you?
I don't.
Although whenever I see a magic show, and they go, "Can you put your name on it?" Mm. I'm thinking,
what would that be worth? A £10 note signed by the Queen on her face.
Where's that going on eBay?
I don't think she's allowed to sign anything. Is she?
Yeah, no. She does sign stuff. I've seen her sign stuff.
No, but not. But it, you
no,
can't,
genuinely, she
but
does
you can't
sign
deface.
Stuff. No, you can't. I think we're moving on from that.
Yeah, I don't know where.
When did you last sit next to her? What Christmas?
2 months ago?
What, a Christmas?
No. You said last... I thought last time.
I sat next to a couple of
last Christmas. Probably at some point in every Christmas, I will have sat next to her.
Oh, right, okay.
She's a member of the...
There is more than one dinner, you know?
Yes.
Oh, it's not just like... It's not just one Christmas Eve you meet up and then go, right, I can't afford the pub this week.
But she's a member of the WI, I believe, down in Sandringham. Because a friend of mine hosted a lunch with the Queen. And apparently she's a very humorous woman.
Okay. Mike?
I concur.
Jay, that leads me on to my next question.
Yes.
Which royal is the King of Bantershire?
The King of Bantershire.
Yeah. Which one do you go off sat next to him? That's going to be great fun.
Can't wait.
Oh, Charlie's a bundle of laughs.
Prince Charles is a bundle of laughs.
Yeah.
I love the way every word comes out. It's like when I play the yes and no game with my kids. You okay?
I am fine, thank you for asking, Daddy. Good day at school. It was lovely, yeah.
Oh, Prince Charles is fun.
Right.
I think he... That's so bad. No, generally, he's a joker. He is a joker. Okay. He loves a joke.
Who else? Who else is good fun? You go, oh, good. I've got a seat next to him. That's going to be good.
Obviously, the younger generation, the cousins are fun.
All right. At least arms across.
Harry.
What's Harry like? Has he got a good bag?
Harry done the top shelf?
Why have I started sweating? I feel like I'm getting grilled.
Has he done the top shelf of pints of whites?
Probably in the past. I can't verify that in any way, shape, or form. And that's not legally binding.
Can you imagine if they're listening? They're going like, yes.
Do they listen? Talk sport. Maybe
Prince William does, because obviously he's a big Aston Villa fan and he literally
loves it. Hold on. That gets to question eight. Question number five. What happened the first time you met the Queen? Where was it? Can you remember?
I know exactly what I do, but I can't tell that story.
Oh, can you not?
No. I'll tell you it off air, but I can't tell
you. Oh, that's even better. I don't care that you can't tell it on air, but you can tell us off air.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant.
There's a few people there.
We'll tweet. Don't worry, gang. We'll tweet.
Follow me on Insta. The
very first time would have been when we won the World Cup. So,
the very first time?
Yeah. There's always a story about Mark Regan, and we've all... Mark Regan's from Bristol, and he's going to hate me for saying this because it's probably not even true, but we walked into the room, and there's a footman who's come in, and we're all stood around, and he's coming in to let them know the Queen's about to come in, and he walks up to... and he's offering out drinks, and he walks up to Mark Regan, and he goes, Earl Grey? And he goes, Mark Regan, good to see you. Sorry, Ronnie.
That was a podcast from TalkSport.
The TalkSport Daily Podcast is proud to be in partnership with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Whatever your mission, home or away, don't delay. Enterprise has the vehicle for the job. Rent from the best lineup in the UK. With over 450 branches, Enterprise has what your business needs. From compact three-door cars to spacious SUVs and people carriers to vans, they offer a large range of reliable vehicles perfect for the job. To find out more and book, visit enterprise.co.uk.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.